and welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nations Comic Book Chronicles.
There you go. I'm like pounding on it. Like, what the heck?
That's what she said.
Ah!
I'm your host, Tim D-O-Double-D. Back from wonderful Brooklyn, New York.
Hello.
Now I'm joined by the man behind the sound effects, New Yorker.
The Brooklyn Knight himself, exactly.
Yeah, Brooklyn Knight himself from New York, Agent 70.
What's up, everybody? We got the crew back together.
Minus one that just fell off.
Oh, no! I spoke too soon.
Not too soon. He didn't want to be introduced. Seems like we've lost dirt.
Oh, just as we hit the airwaves, too.
He'll be back. But make sure to go to Dirt's website, popculturenetwork.com. Read comic book previews and reviews and take a look at his other various podcasts he has on his site. Make sure to go to our site, theclicknation.com, where you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews and news. Follow the Twitter account at theclicknation. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/theclicknation. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/theclicknation. Also subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Circle us on Google Plus and add us to your circles. Join the community, the Click Nation community. And if you ever have any feedback you want to have read on a future show, send that on over to theclicknation@gmail.com.
Yay!
And remember, we record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Make sure to use the hashtag Comic Book Chronicles
on all your favorite social media.
And we have Dirt back.
Maybe.
Yay!
I said you didn't want to be introduced, so that you made sure to get off just in time.
I was a little shy for that part, but I decided I'd come back.
No need to be shy. We will not hurt.
I'm not sure the people who watch this show like me, so you know, I gotta be careful.
That is true, you never know. All those anonymous people on the internet.
Oh, people on the internet.
And that's internet's plural.
Mm.
All right, so last week you guys did a little news, but we can sort of jump around to lots of various stuff I have recorded to talk about. And my computer wants to freeze on me.
Oh, we're all having some technical difficulties tonight.
As much clicking around, I guess. Oh, let's see. There we go. All right, let's start at the top. I'm kind of going to go through this really quickly, and we can sort of chime in because it's a lot of stuff. A lot of it's going to be just announcements from various companies on new books. It's DC Comics is going to launch two new Batman-related titles, Gotham Academy and Arkham Manor. Okay. One of them has Jerry Duggan from Nova and Deadpool. I think he's doing the Gotham Academy book, if I remember correctly. Hopefully I got that right. Thane, the son of Thanos, is going to return in the post-Infinity Thanos. They got up there listening digital commitment. Wonder Woman's getting a new creative team in the fall. I think we talked about that back when the rumors first started, but it's the same creative team, so nothing new there. Boom Studios has been making a lot of different announcements, which began last week. Go to their various website and social media accounts, and you can see all the different ones. More DC news, where they announced more books. Clarion, the witch kid,
is
getting a book. I thought he was a villain, but like I said, it doesn't really matter nowadays. Lobo's getting a book. Phantom Stranger and Pandora series are ending, and a new series called Trinity of Sin will take those two places. And new creative teams for Catwoman and Green Arrow were announced. And actually some more creative teams shuffling farther down on the list once we get there.
Every day we're shuffling.
Brandon Routh is going to join Arrow as the Atom.
Bah, bah, bah.
Brandon Routh, who played Superman and was Superman Returns.
Yeah, I
think that's what that was called. I just remember wanting my money back. So.
Robbie Amell,
we'll leave it at that.
The cousin of the star from Arrow, is going to join The Flash as Ronnie Raymond, one half of Firestorm.
Your favorite character.
I'm yeah. Right. Whose name still makes no sense. Batgirl is going to get a new creative team in the fall.
And a new costume.
Yes. And she's taking selfies in the bathroom.
Ay, ay, ay. Ay, ay, ay.
I will say I like the artist. The artist looks the art looks nice. I kind of like that style. Valiant made an announcement of Jeff Lemire, Matt Kent, and Paulo Rivera working on some kind of anthology or something for Valiant. I guess it's going to be I don't know if it's exactly an anthology type book. It's something different than just a regular comic series, it sounds like. And when Bucky Barnes, The Winter Soldier, is going to be launched in the fall from Alice Cott and Marco Rudy. Who I was
pleasantly surprised to read that today.
I wasn't the biggest fan of Marco Rudy's art, at least during his little fill-in issue of Uncanny X-Men, and mm-hmm. I guess he did the Marvel Knights Spider-Man book. But I enjoyed his New Avengers annual with Frank Barbary. So I'm not sure if his art style lends itself to a monthly book because it probably takes him for a long time to get, put everything down.
Yeah, you're probably right with that.
But I'm more than likely he's probably just launching the book anyway, so.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be someone different in 3 or 4 issues. But yeah, so Bucky is going to be taking a tour of the Marvel Universe in the interviews from the Will Moss, the editor, and Alice Cott. I probably won't read it just because. Well, I'll probably read the first issue. I'm not the biggest Cott fan. His stuff hasn't really grabbed me.
I'm a fan of the character. I want to see where it goes. I did read, although I don't have room, believe it or not, I just ran out of room on my my spreadsheet to list the books that I read.
Whoa.
Yeah. Like I said, I had a lot of traveling between the office and various courthouses the last couple of days, so I had my trusty reading materials with me.
And I guess last week, the Fire Remender hashtag got started because of stuff that happened in Captain America number 22. Which I read the issue and last week and didn't think anything of it. And since I wasn't really on social media all last week since I was traveling, but once I got back, I guess Monday, I think it was,
mm-hmm.
I kind of finally got back on the start of the week and I was like, what's all this?
I was confused by it. I was because I've been keeping track, I've been reading the book pretty steadily, even though that the whole the Zola, storyline just is never ending at this point. It didn't strike me as, weird because I knew that, that the Jet Black character is not a kid. That's why it didn't seem weird at all. So, it just seemed just almost out of the blue for me. It was just something very silly.
But you can follow, I guess the hashtag has been corrupted now, so the original meaning behind it, it probably has been lost if you tried to do a search for it, but basically there's a lot of people misunderstanding who the Jet Black character is and what exactly has been going on from Captain America issue 1 till now. And then people also being mad at his previous works on Uncanny X-Force and whatever else he's done.
Well, basically, from what I read, what it came down to was, in the whole Dimension Z, you know, it's supposed to be 10 years, 12 years, not really sure, but some kind of extended period. And there was a brother and a sister. The sister is Jet Black, and the brother was that Ian, I think?
Yes.
And people, a lot of people apparently got the two characters confused because apparently Jet Black as a little girl is seen in the comic, and then Ian is a baby. And Cap steals Ian and runs away, and apparently somehow along the line, people thought that Ian and Jet Black were supposed to be roughly the same age, which doesn't make sense if you look at any of the artwork, but somehow they thought that because it's a baby in the first issue, that therefore it's 12 years, then she's, you know, 12, maybe 14 years old at the most with these, you know, timelines that they're playing with. And, you know, Rick Remender came out and just basically said, no, like, not only is that inaccurate the way you're reading that, but also in the issue itself, she even says that she just had her 23rd birthday. So if she just had her 23rd birthday, then obviously you're wrong with your math and she's an adult. So people just, I don't know, I guess can't do math and can't understand comic book timelines.
Well, who can blame them at this point, right?
It is a hard thing to keep track of, even for people to actually read the books monthly.
Exactly. I mean, the timeline thing is one thing, but like you said, they say in the book specifically, she's well past majority age, so, you know, I didn't give it a second thought. So
there were some people complaining about, like, here we go once again with the whole thing. You're trying to bring a couple together, so the only way you can do it is to get them drunk and they hook up, you know. And then you have that wake up the next morning, and it's, you know, this terrible cliche, and, you know, people doing that whole modern hookup culture thing, whatever. And I guess Rick Remender said something like, hey, if that bothers you, that bothers you. I can't, you know, you have every right to have your opinion. You know, obviously I don't agree, but if that's how you feel, that's how you feel, and that's one thing. But then there's this other group of people, and they're just morons, you know.
Yep.
So. Absolutely.
And that should do it for news.
Actually, there's one other story I want to throw in real quick. There was a young boy who died of abuse at the hands of his grandparents. And the family buried him, and they wanted to design a statue
to honor
to put on his on his memorial. And he was apparently a big fan of Superman, so they sculpted the statue of this. I guess he was 3 years old when he passed, so they sculpted him as a 3-year-old boy wearing, you know, basically Superman pajamas. And I guess it's in Canada, Toronto.
Toronto.
And the Toronto City Council said, okay, before you cast this thing and actually make it, contact DC Comics, make sure there's going to be no legal problems with the fact that you're using the Superman logo, you know, because that is a copyrighted thing, you know, yada, yada, yada. So the company contacts DC, you know, sends off some letter, and they just get some kind of, like, boilerplate response back that's just like, you know, we're sorry, but at this time we cannot authorize this project, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Now, the people, the family involved in this actually said, we understand 100% where DC is coming from. They probably don't want, you know, child abuse to be associated with Superman. They don't want everybody coming to see this Superman statue in the middle of this graveyard. You know, like, they're like, we see their point. We understand why they would say no. Thousands of people, not in the family, never knew the kid, never associated with the case, absolutely freak out all over the internet and just start tweeting and Facebooking and Tumblring and, you know, whatever, the hippin' and the hoppin' and all that stuff that the kids do nowadays. And apparently, you know, DC then says, wait a minute, what's going on here? All right, let's take a little bit of a closer look. So they go back and they look at the case. And they go, oh, no, okay, now we understand what you're doing here. You know, apparently before it was just kind of one of these things where things come across the desk and it's just like stamp, deny, 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 deny. You know, so then they take a closer look and they go, okay, no, this is fine. This is fine. Go ahead and do this. We're not going to sue you. We have no problems. If this is what you're going to do to honor your child, do this to honor your child. We're not going to, you know, we make no stand against this. So now it's been approved. So they're going to go ahead and finish the statute.
Oh, okay. So that's the updated story, because I'd read it to the point where the outrage, well, the internet was raging, but I didn't know what the outcome, the ultimate outcome of the casting was. So.
Yeah.
Was so, earlier today it came out.
Okay.
And it was one of those things where, you know, it was just paperwork coming across the desk. Hey, we'd like to use Superman 4. No. Hey, we'd like to use Superman 4. No. Hey, we'd like to, no. You know, just one of those things where they probably weren't even, you know, paying that close attention. It's just they get these requests that people want to use it for different things, and they just, you know, no, we're not going to allow this. And then when someone finally piped up, they took a closer look and said, okay, no, wait a minute. You know, our wires were crossed. We're not sure what you're talking about, but now that we see the details of this, it's okay. And part of that could be just the way they went about, you know, they may have just written a letter. You know what I mean? Like, well, typed up a sheet of...
They had a lawyer be their sort of PR person, which is, you don't want them to give statements.
Yeah, you start getting, well, yeah... It's like they just write some random letter and a lawyer writes up some sort of legal document and they're just going to be like, nope, 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 nope.
Yeah, no, no, no.
Well, I was about to say, take it from me, the standard answer is always no.
It can be no, but you know that the lawyer's not going to word it in a way that will read gently to people.
Your request is denied.
Yeah. So good.
Like, I wrote letters like that the other day. Anyway.
Good for the family and all those involved.
All right. So
review time. I'm reading Dirt's list and I'm just shaking my head at how I'm behind on Magnus, Robot Fighter.
And there were two of them this week.
Yeah. Damn it.
All right, well, let's see here. So I guess we'll start with that. They do all these multiple covers, and I can never remember which one is which issue.
Cover A, cover B.
I'm going to start with the Zero. Let me just pull up Zero here. Here is the Zero issue for Magnus Robot Fighter.
Oh, it's just like cover one.
Kind of. All right, now here's the thing about Magnus Zero. I love this book because this is the book that actually explains everything. Well, let me back up. This is the book that you're done reading and you say, now everything has been explained to me. Then you read five and you realize it's not. But going back here for a second, this Zero issue explains why robots have taken over the Earth. Why there's this code that humans are not supposed to hurt robots. Why robots are the dominant life form. What happened to Earth, the history of Earth, the history of mankind, and how all of this has built up to what the universe is today with this giant planet where all the robots look like people, or the majority of them, I guess, look like people, act like people, and are trying to control the whole world. So this does what you want it to do with giving you those answers for things that you've been waiting for over the last couple months, with wondering, you know, why do some look like robots? Why do some look like people? And why do the ones that look like people act so much like people? And why are they so interested in, you know, keeping humanity as part of this mix? It all works together. It all makes sense. And if you know, even now where you're at, Tim, I know you're a couple issues behind, go ahead and read the Zero, because it's going to give you background information that's actually going to be good. Like, I wish this had come out as the Zero early on, because
it was the first issue.
Yeah, it does lay that foundation and the groundwork that is good for the ongoing series. So then, having said that, we go to issue 5, which you think everything, you read that and you go, okay, well, that explains everything. Now I know why all of this works. And then you're reminded of the first issue of Magnus where he's in that happy mountain town and all the humans are living together in harmony. And then suddenly he wakes up and he's in this, weird North American, continent type city, and everything's upside down. And now you're reminded, you have 1,000 more questions because of where he came from and the robot he knew and why that robot was working against these people. So it reopens a whole can of other questions.
Okay.
So it's like you got your answer on everything, and now suddenly you've got a lot more questions that need answers, which is really a good way to keep the story going and to kind of keep you motivated with it, because these lingering things in the back of your head have now been answered, but now you've got a whole mess of other stuff now that they have to answer. But you can kind of see how the whole picture is coming together and how everything is working out. As far as the actual story of issue 5 goes, you're getting a lot of, I don't want to say political intrigue, because that's not really the right term, but the people who are in charge of the humans have different motivations. They're working against each other secretly. There's backhanded deals going on and secret investigations that they don't know about. So there's a lot of other stuff happening with some of the characters, and the woman who is tracking down Magnus, you're finding more about her relationships, her family, her what's going on with her dad, who's one of the high up council members, and all of this kind of stuff. So again, opening up this can of worms and adding a whole bunch of more questions and taking this other character who's the opposite of Magnus, working on the other side of the storyline and making her into a sympathetic character. So you kind of care about her now. You want to know what's going to happen with her. And she, of all things, when Magnus was escaping, he had some contraband, which were books. And, the books of the humans are no longer allowed in this, new world. And one of the books that she finds is the autobiography of Frederick Douglass. And so she's actually sitting down and reading the autobiography, and this is opening to her a whole different part of human history that she's never known before. And the way he talks about, being treated as a slave and having to work hard and building a life for himself, and all of that kind of stuff, and that is part of the world that she's never known. Living in this futuristic society where, everything is different. So she's becoming more human as a character as well in this storyline. So these two books together, 0 and 5, are both really good. I'm still loving this series. I think it's a really great series. Everybody should give it a chance, but especially no matter where you are, if you haven't read any Magnus, or if you're a couple issues behind, go ahead and read that 0, because that's going to give you a lot of background and answers that you're looking for. And that's nice. that's my spiel.
That's why you should be reading Magnus for what, 5 minutes. All right. Let's see. Let me pick one. Where to start? I guess I'll start.
You're supposed to have a list. You type these out in advance.
So yeah, I've got the list. It doesn't matter which one to start with. I'll start with Spread number 1, which I reviewed on theclicknation.com.
I read this too, so I think all 3 of us read it, so we can have a full discussion on it.
The book stars a character called No, who you see on the cover. And you're in a world where a deadly virus disease called the Spread has taken over the world. So we jump in already with the world taken over. And I said in my review, I like the sort of opening where we sort of like jump in the middle where there's been this plane crash and there's some survivors. So already we don't know exactly what caused the plane crash and where the plane was headed. But we do know that there's some cargo aboard, a child who is called Hope. And she could be the hope of civilization surviving the Spread. And the book is from Justin Jordan and Kyle Strom. Let's see what else. Noah is a character who's a man of few words, as Justin Jordan said in an interview on CBR. But I do like that he actually does talk. It's not like, and it doesn't seem like it was forced.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not like he speaks a different language or something, and all he can say in English is no. He's just a man of few words. And, you know, generally he gets into a fight with someone and he just kind of points at him and says no, and that's their clue that they're supposed to, you know, get away.
Exactly.
But he actually can, you know, speak. He can have conversations with people. He just chooses not to because he's grizzled. He's a mountain man.
And he is immune to the spread, which is a little wrinkle.
Right. Lucky guy.
And in interviews, Jordan said he, right now the series is planned for like 60 issues, but if they need to cut it shorter, they can because he has an ending in sight. And something I found interesting was he said that they're going to take like little breaks here and there where there'll be like a guest artist will come on to do like a side story that sort of deals with like another part of the world and how it's dealing with the spread. So try to build this, you know, build a world inside the whole comic instead of just dealing with the main characters.
It reminded me a lot of Sweet Tooth from Jeff Lemire, which is another post-apocalyptic story, and that was from Vertigo and DC Comics, where it had that same type of feeling where, you know, you get kind of thrust into this world, all the bad stuff has already kind of happened, society has collapsed, and these are the scavengers and the remainders that are still out there trying to survive, and you've got this one child who's there to, you know, save humanity or have the clue for rebuilding civilization or whatever. It's very similar in the way that Sweet Tooth worked out. And Sweet Tooth also would take pauses every now and again to bring in a different writer and a different artist to fill in an issue or two to give some, you know, some history, some backstory, side story, you know, something along those lines to help keep the story kind of fresh and moving. So I felt that this was almost like a companion book with that one, with some of the themes that are going on with, and some of the plans that he's spoken of. But I really like this. I mean, I'm a sucker for, you know, the post-apocalyptic stuff anyway. And the spread is kind of like this Cthulhu monster. It's almost kind of like the thing.
I'm glad that you mentioned that because, honestly, to me, you know, maybe it's just because of the similarities I saw in just the way, you know, my first impression of the book just based on its cover is, wait, it's Wolverine as like Lone Wolf and Cub, you know?
Yeah, I was thinking of Lone Wolf and Cub too, yeah.
Exactly, you know, like just looking at that, I'm like, it's Wolverine, but with, you know, like with Daigoro, you know, like Ogami Ito's, you know, kid in Lone Wolf and Cub. But then I open it and I start reading and the spread monster slash virus slash contagion slash whatever, right? The design of it and the way it was portrayed and drawn was just, you know, I thought it was just creepy and, you know, it was definitely effective.
The art definitely helped.
Yeah, it definitely, you know, kind of pushed across the point that, yeah, this is some nasty, dangerous, creepy stuff. So I give the, you know, I give the, who's the penciler on this?
Kyle Strom.
Yes, I give Strom a lot of credit on that. You know, on the design. I don't know if he is the designer of the look of the spread, but it definitely works. It's definitely effective.
Well, and I also want to say that, you know, being the first issue, you got to figure out some way to make an impact with the spread. And the spread is like this bio-organic, tentacle, spiky creature, and it's like pulsating in blood red. And so the area in which they decide to unfold the first issue here is in the middle of the snowy mountains. So everything in the mountains is white and pristine and clean, and everywhere you see the spread, it's this bright crimson just, you know, it sticks right out everywhere. And
it's like,
and
I was about to say, it's like a creeping ooze or a creeping goo.
Yeah, and it's dripping blood everywhere. Right. So you can see in the wreckage, there are all these red splotches of blood from the victims and from the spread. And so it makes it very clear, you know, when you're flipping through the book and looking, there are places where off in the distance you can see just kind of these red mounds in the background. You know that that's the spread that way, and then going the other way is obviously going to the supposed safety. And I think it did a real service to the book. If they had done this in the middle of a city, you know, where you'd have so many different colors, you'd have a bunch of reds and browns and blues and whatever, it wouldn't stand out as much. But the fact that they're in the mountains, everything's white, and then you have this bright red just popping right out. You know, the idea of setting it in the snow and then the colorist coming in and making sure that it has that pop really makes a difference and really makes it stand out.
And it was creative how they had initially revealed the strain, how it came out the person's body.
Yeah, well, that's why I was talking about The Thing. That's where I see some influences from The Thing coming out with that, because that was...
Yeah, definitely.
So, I mean, if you're talking that they're going to steal some concepts from The Thing, from Lone Wolf and Cub, from, you know, even if I'll say Sweet Tooth, but that may not even necessarily be what they were thinking of. I mean, that's just some good stuff to pull from right there.
Right. And it's not, yeah, obviously, it's just an homage, really, with the Lone Wolf and Cub thing. You know, it's not the same thing, but it's just baby strapped to him, right.
Yeah, there was probably definitely a thought in their head where, oh, you know, that's something iconic that we can play off of. You know?
Right. But I liked it. You know, it was definitely creepy, and you know, as I said, the art definitely was effective in portraying the spread as just this, you know, very dangerous thing. As you know, I keep saying thing because that's what you keep saying. You know, you keep comparing it to the movie. So, you know, it's I'm not 100% sure I would pick this book up on my own. I'm just not a fan of, you know, this genre, but I liked it.
See, yeah, and I love this genre, so this is perfect for me. I plan on reading this until it fizzles out or it comes to a triumphant conclusion.
Cool.
And it's also, by the way, first issue is sold out at the distributor level. It's already going in for a second print.
Nice.
That's good to hear.
Yeah, in fact, it sold out right when we opened. We sold a couple copies here and there, and then right when we opened, you know, online, we sold a couple copies here and there overnight, and then the moment we opened, some guy snatched up the rest of the remaining copies.
Speculators.
Give us a book, Agent 70.
I was gonging the speculators. I was just trying to think, you know, what I should do to, you know, do about the speculators. Let me see. How about, I think we all read it, Grayson number one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I forget which book it was. It was in the aftermath of Forever Evil, where Batman is, you know, trying to convince Dick Grayson, the former Nightwing, the former Robin, to go undercover and infiltrate this...
That was the end of Nightwing.
Was it the end of Nightwing? Or was it... Oh, yeah. That was the last... It was issue 30, right?
Where they're just beating the crap out of each other.
Exactly.
Cave.
Last issue of Nightwing. Correct. So I just couldn't remember if it was a special, if it was... I just know it was in the aftermath of the events of Forever Evil. So... you know, we had that issue, and this is obviously the next step in that, where Dick Grayson is now infiltrated this, I don't know if it's a spy group per se, but it's definitely an espionage group called Spiral, and he gets to show off a little, some of his Batman training. And there's a special guest star that I was actually shocked to see, because I'm not all that familiar with him because of my lack of familiarity with DC properties circa, you know, early 2000 or something like that. Something like, maybe it was the late 90s, early 2000s, Midnighter? Spoiler alert?
Yeah, I was surprised to see him make an appearance.
Yeah. So, you know, I was surprised to see him, and that kind of threw me off. But I like this issue overall. I realized that the previews had come out and had already revealed that Helena Bertinelli, the Huntress, at least the name, is going to be repurposed in the New 52 as one of the characters in this book.
And here's the weird thing. Okay, Huntress is technically Bruce Wayne's daughter from Earth 2, but in the New 52, they did a Huntress miniseries that seems to be a completely different character.
Right.
Who was running as the Huntress, running around Italy and stopping these Italian mafia guys. And it seems to be that character who is reemerged here, who's apparently not running around as Huntress anymore, and because now there's that other Huntress.
Right.
So I'm not sure how this character goes from being the Huntress of the New 52 to giving up Huntress and being part of this spy ring, and then opening up for the Earth 2 Huntress. I don't know. It's very, very confusing. But
don't
it seems
get
to be,
me started.
It seems to be that same character from that other miniseries. So if you read don't that miniseries earlier on, it's there you go. But,
I mean, overall, I think it's a good launch for the premise. I thought it was a good launch. It's unfortunate that you really can't pick this up without knowing what transpired in Forever Evil somewhat. But you know they kind of talk about it at the beginning. But I feel that if you were coming in fresh to this, it'd be kind of a hard concept to pick up until you get kind of further into the book. So you may not want to keep reading after the first few pages. But I thought it was a good start. What do you guys think?
You know, I'm a sucker for some good art, so
okay.
I love the art team on it, Janin, and I'm not sure who did the colors on it, but they display Dick's sort of acrobatic skills and I guess whatever this new power, quote unquote, he has that he displayed. And I don't know anything about the group Spiral either, but it seems it's intriguing that they chose to have Midnighter guest star, and supposedly he's going to be in issue 2. And sort of the last couple page reveal of what exactly Spiral is up to in the background, in the shadows. At least it sort of has connections to the rest of the DC universe, so at least for now, doesn't appear Grayson will be off sort of in its own corner of the world, DC universe.
Well, Spiral was a character in the old 52, or whatever you call it, but I really don't remember a whole lot about who Spiral was. It just seemed like they were kind of one of those characters, that Justice League Europe would beat up on, and
they were just another acronym like Argus, and right? That's how I sort of remember them.
I think the Hypno power has something to do with the character Spiral. Like they had that ability to hypnotize people. And I think it was just a guy. I don't remember if there was a group or if it was just one dude.
I could be wrong. My DC is.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where it's a character that didn't make a huge impact, but there's definitely some sort of connection because of the way the character is portrayed here. It's a guy with a swirl on his face, so you can't see his facial features. And I remember the old character, at least that I remember, had like a giant swirl on his chest. So it's definitely a reimagining of that character, but how exactly, I don't know. But he seems to be somehow building a database of superheroes and their true identities. And what he's doing it for, if whether or not this is just one of those NSA, government tracking, cataloging type situations, or if this is, towards some other purpose, who knows?
Nefarious purpose.
Right, but apparently this is why Batman asked Dick Grayson to become part of it. So whether or not you're going to get a long-running series out of Dick Grayson, James Bond super spy, I don't know. But I did think that for the first issue, it was at least entertaining, the way he's got another superhuman there that he's trying to ferry from one point to another, trying to steal away, I guess is the term. You know, the whole, if this had been the pilot of a TV show, I'd be at least tuning in for the next episode, because I thought there was a lot of action in here, and it was pretty fun. But as far as what the long term is on this, I really have no clue.
I mean, we've never really had, I may have touched on this in a previous show, we've never really had a spy story in the DC universe, right? You know, not
Checkmate,
not in the vein of, because this is definitely more in the vein of Nick Fury and S.H.I.E.L.D. and stuff like that.
Well, I was going to say more like Jason Bourne and
James Bond.
But
I'm drawing the Marvel parallel because,
well, I guess, I mean, technically Nick Fury was created because of the James Bond craze, so. Right. There is that. But this, I think this fits that new kind of action spy, like the new Jack Ryan movie that they just did. You know, all of that kind of stuff, which I love that stuff, too. So, like I said, I thought it was, you know, pretty good action, and it was a fun story to see, you know, spies working in a superhero world type thing. But, like I said, the long term, I have really no idea where this is going.
Okay. All right.
Let's see, what else can we pull up? What else did we all read? Let's see. How about...
Did you guys read your Marvel books? Did you read your...
Yes.
Of course.
All New Invaders, did you guys read that?
I like that. This is one of my, like, kind of sleeper picks for Click of the Week.
It's this
Roddy Katz. Actually an enjoyable book.
It's Roddy Katz's Click of the Week, I believe.
It's very, very close to making it, you know, to making it my, you know, I became very, very involved, you know, just very impressed by the whole, by the storytelling in this particular issue, because, it, you know, I think Robinson really had a good feel for, you know, kind of developing Jim Hammond as a character. We've never seen this kind of depth, you know, given to Jim Hammond ever. And, you know, I kind of like where he's going with this. And they're, you know, they introduced this brand new character, and they gave the character, you know, some roots in the Marvel universe to, you know, to kind of, you know, not be a slave to continuity, but to at least plant the character firmly in the Marvel universe and have a basis for that character's existence. But at the same time, kind of, you know, carve out new territory and go in a new direction with it. And it's nice to see, I may have said this the first time the character appeared, in the, I believe it was the last issue, it's nice to see a female Asian American, or I don't think she is she Asian American? I guess so. A female Asian character who, you know, who's, I guess they're trying to lay the groundwork to have her be a future character in this series and possibly a future invader. But I think what I enjoyed most about this was just the characterization of Jim Hammond, and I liked the way the story was told. I liked the, you know, the way the character was portrayed and how, you know, he's being developed to be more than just, you know, I guess kind of a, I guess we got a lot of this with the Vision, where, you know, a synthetic man, you know, kind of coming to grips with who he is in the world. And we're just sort of throwing that aside and saying, hey, look, you know, this is the character, this is how he's developing. So it's, you know, it's a nice departure from I guess, what the old stories used to be about, you know, trying to develop Jim Hammond as a character in the mainstream Marvel Universe now.
With this having an Original Sin banner at the top, did you feel like it was a good tie-in for Original Sin, or is that just kind of the marketing of the month?
I think it's marketing, but at the same time, it definitely does. I mean, listen, the whole Original Sin premise, where the Watcher's Eye, you know, the secrets held within, you know, the Eye kind of go, kind of get revealed to people who really want to know them. That's the rationale that they use in this book. That's why she was affected by what was, I guess, the being, you know, being in close proximity to the Watcher's eye. That was that the orb was holding in that issue of Original Sin. So it was a tool for the story. I don't know if it was I guess it was essential. You know, it's sort of bogey. I'm like kind of waffling because, you know, they still could have told the story without having to use the Original Sin premise. You know what I mean? It was just a convenient way to, you know, reveal this character's past. You know, and kind of give us all a reason to do a recap and to do you know what I mean, to do it like an origin recap and stuff like that. So.
So let me ask, since I know you're a fan of this, the other book that James Robinson is reading or writing, did you read Fantastic Four?
I did read Fantastic Four this week. I'm not nearly as impressed with where he's going with Fantastic Four. I'm just not. You know, I definitely like where Invaders is going. You know, I like that it's stressing Jim Hammond. I really do. You know, as an aside, I find it funny that the one active Human Torch right now is Jim Hammond, not Johnny Storm. You know, remember all the conspiracy theories we were bandying about the Fantastic Four and Marvel versus Fox a few weeks back, remember? So, you know, I'm not a fan of where Robinson... I'll talk about Fantastic Four number 7 real quick. This is a more Original Sin stuff. I hate to say this as a long-time reader, you know, maybe an on-and-off reader, but definitely a long-time reader of Fantastic Four. The Original Sin that's revealed, spoiler alert, let me get the bell. The spoiler, you know, what I'm spoiling is that, yes, you know, Johnny Storm probably screwed up the one best chance that Reed Richards put together to try to cure Ben Grimm of, you know, being the Thing. And what basically happened is that Reed and Johnny hid it from Ben, and that was the Original Sin. Bum, bum, bum. Like, really? You know, hasn't this happened like 50,000 times in the Fantastic Four where Reed just screws up, you know, something happens to Reed's latest attempt to try to cure Ben Grimm, you know what I mean?
But it hasn't been told for these newer readers, so better be told
know,
again.
I know. I guess like that's...
Just like we haven't seen Wolverine lose his healing factor before.
Right. You know, and I guess that's where, I guess that's the disconnect that the older readers have. So, you know, ultimately, you know, if this is the first time a reader's seeing, you know, Reed's attempt to try to cure Ben Grimm, then yeah, I guess it does have an effect. But for those of us who've, you know, seen these attempts going back through the Lee Kirby book, you know, pages, it's nothing new. So I was kind of disappointed that was the Original Sin. I'm like, really? That's it? In all seriousness, that was my reaction. I was like, that's it? That's the Original Sin? Are you serious? You know? So, you know, I was underwhelmed by that, and, you know, that was the majority of the book. And what's funny about this is that the end of the book, you know, the book ends on a cliffhanger, and I found the cliffhanger vastly more interesting than the Original Sin tie-in. So, you know, take from that what you will, maybe how James Robinson was kind of shoehorning something Original Sin-y or Sin-related to, you know, into the book.
So the cliffhanger has nothing to do with Original Sin?
Pretty much. Pretty much. So, yeah, like I said, you know, I kind of slogged my way through the Original Sin part of the book, very disappointed, and then got to the cliffhanger. I was like, oh, okay, we'll see where this goes. So, you know, a very uneven issue for me, but as I said earlier, I'm not a fan of where he's going with the Fantastic Four right now. I'm not a fan of, you know, recapping what's happened in the past couple issues where, you know, the Baxter building's being taken over and the family's being torn apart because of... you know, Reed Richards getting sued by the city, and, you know, it's just some stupidity.
I'm wondering how the Captain America changes will be reflected in All New Invaders. Jump back to that book.
Soon enough, because now, I think that might be where the next couple of issues go, because they've wrapped up this Jim Hammond slash Radiance storyline. So maybe they'll tie, you know, they'll bring Cap back into the book now that that's, you know, now that they've already released an issue of Cap where, you know, there's no cure right in the foreseeable future. You know what I mean? Like, this might be the status quo for a little while.
Okay. Let's see.
Let's see. What else did you guys read? Let's see if we can get some more.
All New X-Men number 29.
I like this book.
It was cool. It ended the little story going on with the future Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, and sort of we get some answers to how members of the team came to join up with the team.
Right.
Sort of all new X-Men coming together and working as a team. We learn sort of what Jean Grey's new powers involve.
Sort of.
As 23 steps up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about it, really.
What did you think of the time travel aspect of this?
I kind of enjoyed the other issues more than the finale, which it's always the finale that Bendis doesn't seem to nail, right?
Yeah.
The landing.
Right. What I meant by asking that was that, yeah, you know, they even touched on it. I know Bendis even put a couple of, you know, kind of meta-type comments in there, like, so you're going to send us back into the future, you know? Like, didn't you screw up, you know, but you can't send us into the past, right? It's like, really? You can do one and not, you know, like, I was just kind of like, you know, they had to kind of touch on that in the story. Do you recall that?
Kinda. I guess in the whole, the look at the future and basically the loop, the constant loop that is created, I guess.
Right. But, no, I mean, they're talking about, like, sending the Brotherhood back into the future or forward into the future. And they're like, yeah, you know, we can do this one way but not the other. And it's kind of weird. It's, you know, to me, it's still, you know, I'm still not happy with this whole time travel thing. So
it would make sense to be able to send them back to the future but then not be able to send the all new X-Men back to the past.
Right, but, you know, that's what they're saying right now, that they can do that but not the other way, so.
Okay.
Yeah. Go back and reread that particular panel. It's, you know, it's between older Beast and younger Beast, so.
I do like their discussion. He's like, they're going to try to blame you for a lot of stuff that is your fault and isn't.
Right. So, I mean, it was an enjoyable book. I agreed that the ending of this particular story arc wasn't that strong. It seemed like it ended within the first, what, like 6 or 7 pages of the book, and then the rest was aftermath, right?
Yeah.
So, that's kind of weird. You know, it's a weird way to kind of space out this particular issue.
Has there been no Original Sin in All New X-Men?
Nope.
I was about to say, I don't know if it was teased as the next issue, as being, you know, a crossover in the next issue.
It's not. They're not tying into it. Okay. The only X-Men's involvement in Original Sin is the Uncanny X-Men and the Last Will and Testament of Charles Xavier, which is supposed to rock the X-Books to, you know, it's supposed to change some status quo and all this other stuff they're saying.
Sure it will.
So I'm kind of interested to see what that's going to be.
Roddy Cat chimed in saying the end of All New Invaders similarly didn't tie into Original Sin. So the end of All New Invaders, the cliffhanger at the end of that one, much like Fantastic Four also, is an Original Sin tie-in.
Yes. No, but I still think that the way this character was introduced kind of helped, you know, the Original Sin tie-in actually, you know, was a convenient way to recap this particular character's backstory. You know, without it being kind of forced on the reader. It's like, oh, it's all part of this, you know?
Okay. And that is Roddy Cat's click of the week, by the way.
Nice.
All New Invaders?
Yes.
Yeah, it was a good book. It was a good book. It's actually, I think, this issue and the last issue are definitely worth reading. If you haven't picked up any of the earlier ones, you know, the when they're in battle with the Kree, you don't need to read that. Read these last couple issues.
Did anybody read Spider-Man 2099?
No.
No. I did not get to it.
I didn't get to it.
I did not either. And I have not been reading Amazing Spider-Man just because they got rid of Superior and I'm done.
Yeah.
You know. But I will say that from our store standpoint, retailer standpoint, Grayson and Spider-Man 2099 have been the two big mainstream books of the week that have been nice. Just huge sellers.
No kidding.
Nostalgia for a lot of people.
Yeah. Or at least for Spidey 2099 with Grayson, maybe it's just a brand new number one with a brand new
I was intrigued for Grayson, so as long as Janin is on art, I'll probably continue reading it. It wasn't bad, so hey.
All right.
Yeah, there have been worse number ones as part of the New 52 than this.
Right.
And supposedly one of them was New Suicide Squad, which I didn't read, but
I read that.
I read bad things about it.
I've got a copy of it here to read, but I haven't read it.
It was a tough read.
I'm not a fan of the Joker's daughter character in any way, shape, or form, so just the fact that she's involved in the book makes me reticent to get involved with it.
I can tell you that. I'm like, are we in rapid fire review now?
Yeah, let's do some quick ones.
So, just very quickly, more meta type comments in this book where Amanda Waller is like, why do we have Harley Quinn and the Joker's daughter on the same team? We're kind of, you know, we're kind of duplicating the crazy psycho killer thing, aren't we? You know, having Deadshot and Deathstroke on the same team, you know, with the high powered assassins, kind of duplicating things, and basically mirroring what the reader is probably thinking at that time. What the hell's going on here? It was a tough read. It definitely took me a while to get through some of the more dialogue heavy pages. I didn't care. I really just didn't care about, you know, most of these characters. I wanted to see what was going to happen at the end, which is, I guess, everybody's goal sometimes when they're reading, you know, a comic they pick up for the first time, right? They just want to see what happens at the end. But, you know, it was just a tough slog through the dialogue parts and the setup.
And it bothers me because I really like Deathstroke. And I really like that character. And I hate the way that they're shoehorning him into this, especially because he's got a new series coming out, and you would hope that they would just say, well, you know, screw it, he doesn't have to be on one of these stupid teams, you know, go back to him in his own solo book, but unfortunately, that's not the case. He's stuck in Suicide Squad.
I will say that in the interview I read this week, the writer Sean Ryan said that the roster will be fluid as the series goes on, so people will be coming and going.
Yeah, I would hope so.
On one hand, though, that from a sales point of view, you know, in the store, that really sucks with a team book because people will buy the book because it has a particular character they want, and when that character leaves, then they'll stop buying.
They'll drop it, right.
Yeah. The only reason why we sold copies of Suicide Squad from the original series was because Harley Quinn was in it.
Mm.
People would come in and go, hey, do you have Harley Quinn? Well, we're sold out of Harley Quinn. Everybody buys that. But we do have Suicide Squad sitting here, and people would grab a couple of those.
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good point.
I was going to say, can we talk about Avengers number 32?
I'm going to bring up something real quick.
Okay, good.
Concerning the writer, are y'all familiar with the writer, Sean Ryan? Like, I've heard he's done other stuff before.
Nope.
And the only reason I'm bringing it up is because he did write the 100th special anniversary issue of Spider-Man number one, which I did read, which I give him credit for the future story, because it's supposed to be like, this is what the Marvel Universe would look like for their 100th anniversary, whatever, year 2026 or something like that, I heard, or whatever. So he sort of wrote out, sort of plotted out this 8-part storyline. We're jumping in right at the end, issue 8 of 8, and there's this new symbiote, that's like a techno symbiote where it can connect with computers and the internet and whatnot. And I guess Eddie Brock had it and Spider-Man had it, but both of them finally rejected it and decided it was too dangerous to stay around, but the Kingpin got his hands on it, and so Kingpin and Venom, Kingpin, and Spider-Man fight, and then Spider-Man burns the symbiote, and the story's over. That's kind of like the quick synopsis of the book. And I don't know, it was a weird issue, because for one, the artist on it was kind of like, he uses like the computer, sort of computer art. So you have like Peter Parker running around in his boxer briefs the entire issue, like all jacked up on roids.
Yeah, I see it.
And it kind of just ends abruptly, and there's like allusions to stuff that happened in the other previous 7 issues. But I don't know, I guess Peter didn't really do much speaking besides like internal monologue, but I don't know if Sean Ryan had Peter's voice down. It wasn't that much wisecracking or sort of Peter Parker dialogue really
Peter
going
Parker,
on.
Right.
So I was, yeah. I got to read his Suicide Squad book to see
I'm looking through some of the other stuff that he's done, and I'm seeing he did a lot of stuff with the 1602 tie-ins, the Marvel 1602. He also did stuff with Exiles, the old Secret Six series from DC. He pops up a couple times on Runaways, Phoenix End Song, District X. So he's done a lot of stuff back and forth between Marvel and DC in the past, but it looks like most of it is spin-offs and side
kind
series,
of secondary
things
stuff.
Like that. Yeah.
Okay.
Rebels from DC Comics. Apparently he did that.
Wasn't Rebels a Legion thing?
Yeah, it was. Legion is forced to disband or whatever, so then they
right.
become Rebels. And...
Right. That's it.
So.
Yeah, nothing earth-shattering. But anyway. So can we talk about Avengers 32 now?
Yeah. Mumbo jumbo.
You're really dying to get to that one?
Oh, only because I read this first this week, and it was so not mind-bending, but it definitely made me think, and I can appreciate that more so than some of the other mumbo jumbo that Hickman has written in the past, X number of years that we've been reading him, in Fantastic Four and Avengers, right? I actually stopped to think while I was reading this, and I was like, wow, some of this is actually pretty thought-provoking. And I give Hickman a lot of credit for that. Because it wasn't stuff that made me automatically, just like with anything that we don't get right away, our eyes tend to glaze over, when we're reading it. My eyes did not glaze over when I was reading this. I did not think of it immediately as mumbo-jumbo and try to kind of skim through it and move on. It was actually thought-provoking. And, there was a couple of nice little references in the book. Just a quick spoiler alert, one of the Guardians of the Galaxy does show up in the book. And it's a funny little scene.
The reason it doesn't make your head hurt is because it finally is starting to tie into stuff he's done in previous issues.
Right.
So you're like, oh, okay, I remember that.
Right. Starts explaining some of the incursions and where they're coming from, and this is definitely up. It's a surprise candidate for me for Click of the Week because of how thought provoking I thought it was.
Okay. My comment for the Avengers 32 was more time traveling. And yeah, the links to earlier issues of Avengers made it a better read.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels like it's starting to pay off?
I think so.
After 32 issues?
Yeah, 32 issues is finally payoff coming.
Talk about long-form storytelling.
But then we have to jump ahead. We get the 3-8 months ahead jump, and then we have to backtrack to get to that 8 months. So it's still going to be like, it's going to be like 50 issues. 50 issue story arc.
Mercy.
So have fun with that.
Yeah, seriously. That's an omnibus waiting to happen. Forget to trade people back, right?
Quick reviews. Avengers Undercover number 7. Who's the Runaways guy? Is it Alex Wilder? Or Wilder?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I wasn't sure if that was his last name.
I think it is.
Him and Nico have some moments. Chase, of course, was wounded last issue. And there was a surprise ending.
Nice. Don't spoil it. I didn't read it yet.
Yeah, I can't really remember what else happened in it. There was something in the middle. But honestly, I'm like drawing a blank, which is bad.
Yada, 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 and then a surprise ending.
That's funny. Yeah.
Rendlesin 5.1. Of course, this is the 10th realm of Loki and Thor crossover where they find out Angela is their sister.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be.
I thought her tie to Odin and them would be more complicated than what they... At least what it appears to be.
Mm-hmm.
Put it that way.
Yeah, I agree.
This was more of the Loki-centric issue, just as it was scripted by Al Ewan, and it had Lee Garbett on art, except for like one page from Simone Bianchi. Yeah. But you have Loki and Thor and Freya and future Loki. Scheming, of course.
Of course.
I'm enjoying Loki.
That's the best part. I was about to say, that's the best part of the way Loki's being written right now, right?
Yeah. It's real good. Am I done? Yes, I am.
All right, let me throw out a couple real quick ones. Winter Soldier. Oh, listen to that. It's Brooklyn in the house as the ambulance drives by. Where was I? Captain Marvel. Oh, Winter Soldier. I'm sorry. Winter Soldier, Bitter March, part
5.
This is a wrap-up to the story. I'm not happy with how this ended because it's not convincing. It's kind of a
cop-out?
It's an unoriginal ending, an unoriginal motivation for Ran Shen to become the Iron Nail. You know, to become disillusioned with America and with S.H.I.E.L.D. And, you know, because, you know, spoiler alert, it's all over a woman that he loses.
Hmm.
You know? And I'm like, really? That's it? That's what causes this dude to go bat blank crazy and, you know, take the super soldier serum out of Cap? Like, really? That's it? That's what causes all that? This is the precursor? This is the impetus? So... I was kind, you know, I was underwhelmed by that that revelation that this is all because of, you know, him losing, you know, possibly, you know, one of the loves of his life or the love of his life. We'll see, but you know, that was disappointing. But otherwise, I was just happy to see you know, the Winter Soldier, you know, doing some more cool things. Nightcrawler number 4. Is anyone reading this?
I unfortunately gave it up.
This issue was fun. Right? What's that?
Todd Knock?
Yeah, still doing it. The art is very good. This issue was fun. This issue very much felt like an X-Men book. You know, what's really annoying about the way books are put out now, there's so many things on the stand to try to, you know, appease all the fans of certain characters, whereas this is definitely a story that you could have seen pop up in Amazing X-Men with no real need for a Nightcrawler book on its own. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because the X-Men play a pretty big role in it, and I would have much preferred to have this be the lead story in Amazing X-Men, as opposed to, you know, having a Nightcrawler series all on its own. And, you know, God forbid Marvel makes more money. You know, I know that's what they're in the business to do. But, I could have seen this as an amazing X-Men storyline and would have been perfectly happy seeing it there. You know, speaking of Amazing X-Men number 9, I read it and honestly couldn't even tell you right now unless I take a look at the cover what happened. Oh, no, I didn't read this yet. I apologize. It was on my list. It was on my list of things to get to, and I just didn't get to it. So I did not get to this book this week. I apologize. Let's see.
Captain Marvel.
Rapid Fire. Captain Marvel. Yeah, I was going to get to Captain Marvel number 5. I was very impressed with Captain Marvel, Marvel number 5 this week. I enjoyed this read, and this is another strong candidate for Click of the Week for me, honestly, because I like the way that Deconic is kind of expanding upon what happened in the cosmic stuff with the Spartax and forgive me, I keep forgetting the crossover now. Space crossover. Yeah, Infinity. You know, I like that she's expanding on what happened in Infinity in this book and dealing with, you know, expanding on the Spartax and the power that they wield, you know, in this universe or in this galaxy at least. If you recall, one of my criticisms of Infinity was, all right, you know, and the buildup of the Spartax is, we've never heard of these people. Why are they so influential? You know, they're not the Shi'ar, they're not the Kree, they're not the Skrulls. They're just this, like, humanoid-looking group that have so much power, but they're not humans. So what's the deal? You know, like, where do they come from? Why do they get so much influence? But, you know, I think Deconic is doing a good job of building them up as a good foil for Captain Marvel and the space heroes from Earth. And, honestly, I'm kind of getting a kick out of, you know, out of the wake of Infinity, like, aliens, you know, addressing Avengers and kind of revering, you know, members of the Avengers. Like, that's an Avenger. I'm like, yeah, that's cool. You know, that's a great development for the character and for the team. Yeah, that's the fanboy in me. You know, I'm like, yeah, that's cool. I'm glad, I'm happy to see that the Avengers have kind of, you know, gotten to that level of prestige. You know what I mean? So, you know, I was happy to read that. You know, this is definitely a contender for Click of the Week for me. As I said, I enjoyed the read. I enjoyed the character development of Carol Danvers in this. And the art in this is pretty good. I like the fact that they sort of explain the difference between that Mohawk look and how they, you know, how they designed it and the way she looks kind of just walking around. And, you know, it's a, you know, I like the fact that, you know, she does have a battle mode type look, as a, you know, and then there's like the casual, like non-helmeted mode that we're all sort of used to seeing, and we would recognize Carol Danvers a lot more readily, you know, looking like that. So, you know, this is a strong book. I recommend it for anyone who wants to read about, you know, Carol Danvers and wants to just read, you know, just another character being developed in a good way, much the way I would recommend, you know, if you wanted to see a character kind of that's fertile soil that's, you know, that some writers are starting to try to grow things in, just like with Invaders and Jim Hammond. I think Captain Marvel is still that. It's still a great book to see, you know, to watch a character be developed.
Radicat says, regarding Amazing X-Men, he says, Amazing X-Men's World War of Wendigo storyline feels basically like a zombie apocalypse story. But curious to see how this issue's end run.
Okay.
Well, that might be worth it to me just to read the two or three issues of the story then.
Right. All right.
I will say for Captain Marvel, I was originally going to stop reading Captain Marvel, but then I kept getting people telling me online, you know, it's good, I need to give it a try. So I read issue 4, and I enjoyed it enough, so I will continue with the issue 5 that came out this
week. I recommend it. It reads very well.
Yeah. Maybe I gave up on it too quickly.
Yeah. Let me throw out a couple of quick DC books. The weekly books, Batman Eternal number 14, this was a good issue. Primarily because Jason Fabok does the art in it. You know, it keeps the art very sharp. you know, one of the tough parts of this weekly grind is that the art teams are rotating, and I think they specifically had Fabok do an issue where a lot of storylines come to a head, and you know, things develop where, you know, they want you to kind of stick with it at this point, because we are slogging through, what issue number is this now? 14? Yeah. So, you know, it's been a good number of issues now, and I think they want, you know, I think this is definitely a book to try to keep the reader engaged, because now, you know, let me just put it this way without spoiling too much. Things obviously aren't as they seem in real life, same as in this book. You know, and we'll leave it at that. And, you know, the same, you know, and one of the foibles, Batman's foibles, one of the things that people always harp on, you know, bad guys don't die in the Batman universe. They just go to Arkham Asylum or to jail, and they come back, you know, just as bad, if not worse, than when they went in. You know, you sort of see that, you know, that particular weakness, or that foil, you know, that one aspect of the way Batman operates, kind of coming to the forefront in this book as well. New 52 features End. Someone in one of their notes I saw talked about Hawkman.
Yes.
Right. I don't want to spoil what happens, but there's some stuff happening with Hawkman in Future's End, where, you know, stuff happening to him. Remember, he was supposedly blown up. Remember?
Right.
So, since there's stuff happening to him, guess what? Maybe he's not so dead.
So is he the only one from Stormwatch that survives?
They're teasing. I hate to spoil it. Where's the bell? Ding, 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 ding. They're teasing that he may not have been the only survivor.
Oh, that's too bad. Sorry. That's too bad.
I know. I hate to ruin it for you.
Let me quickly jump in then, since speaking of Hawkman. I'm going to grab the Justice League United number 3.
I couldn't read this. I'm so proud of you for reading it. I could not read it. I tried. I was on, you know, I was on, just very quickly, I was on the last legs of my trip home tonight, and I was like, I can't. It's just too hard to read. Now go on.
This one is definitely better than I think the last two have been.
Okay.
It's almost as if they kind of felt everything out in the first two issues, and now things are kind of falling into place, and they're a little more comfortable with the characters and what they can do and how they all actually have a role. There's a reason why they're there, and those reasons are starting to pay off. They're starting to work together as a team, which is actually helpful. And they are keeping, there's this interesting technique that they picked up. Whenever there's like a big hit on someone, you know, someone throws a big powerful punch, or there's some sort of explosion or something, everything turns black and white and red. And it's not that the blood is red, it's just kind of like one of those in Mortal Kombat, when you go for the big punch in the guy and it turns to X-ray and you see the bone snap and whatever. It's like they're kind of doing something along those lines, where there's a big important hit or a big punch or a big explosion, whatever, and you've got that pop, that panel where it's all black and white and red, and I think that's really interesting. If nothing else, that's very interesting, an artistic thing that they throw in there. But in this particular issue, the first two issues throw a lot of stuff at you, where they uncover something and they're like, oh, that's weird, why is that happening? And then you don't get an answer to it, and it just kind of, the story keeps moving. And in this one, they finally start to answer some of that stuff. You understand a little bit better why things have been going on the past two issues. Martian Manhunter, his powers actually become useful, which is something that doesn't always happen. You know, his powers beyond just the fact that he's a big, strong guy who can
change his form. Yeah, I was about to say, he's sort of a Superman, you know?
Right. His mind-reading ability actually... His telepathy becomes an actual vehicle for character growth and for moving the story in a way other than just, where are the secret plans? Quick, read his mind and find out, and we'll know where his hideout is. You know, there's something beyond that, which adds a nice moment to the story. But the big thing here at the end that I was commenting on with Hawkman is that there's this device, and it's going to explode. It's unstable. And so Hawkman grabs the core, and he's going to fly it out into space so it can explode, and you know, he's like you know, you have a family, you've got parents to go back to, you've got a wife, you've got a kid, I've got nothing left, so I'm just going to go, and he grabs it, and he flies up, and explodes, and they find his body, and they're like, oh my god,
Hawk that was tough. Dead. That was tough to read, because I know what happens in Futures and
Number Well, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, oh, they killed Hawkman, except Hawkman dies in 5 years in Futures End. Like, that's what we
doesn't.
Got at the
and then doesn't.
End. So, there's but no...
Futures End is one big, like, Elseworld anyway.
Is it? No, it's not.
That and, like, the Futures End books in September, the possible futures.
Oh, Lord. But like I said,
for the ones they decide to have be canon or not be canon,
obviously I'm spoiling major parts of this week's issue of Futures End, but it's kind of weird seeing what happened in Futures End, reading that, and then going to this issue, and I'm like, wait, what's with the Hawkman? Why would they release this in the same week? You know?
Yeah, that was... This definitely should have come out before Futures End, and it, quite possibly, when it was originally written, it may have been. Justice League United was actually supposed to come out before it did, by a couple months, so very well this could have come out first, originally, but because of the messed up schedules, it got pushed back, and so it loses some of that impact.
Right.
So it's just really take something away when you have this big, oh my gosh, this character may have actually died. Wait, I just saw him die 5 years in the future a month ago.
Right.
You know? Really spoiled the end of that. But I will say, the book is not, it's still not to the level of being a Justice League. Like, this is Avengers world. You know, this is Secret Avengers.
That's fine.
The book you don't have to read, but if you're a fan of the properties or the characters, then you're...
It's like a hodgepodge team of people that
leftovers.
Have...
Leftovers.
They're the leftovers.
Yeah. So, like I said, it definitely feels like this is a step in the right direction and a step forward in a good way, but it's still not to the same level as anything else.
Right. What's funny about that is that these really are the leftovers, whereas... You know, the premise with Avengers, at least, is that the teams are so big. You know, there's so many of them that they do want to spotlight some of the characters with smaller profiles and raise their profiles.
Well,
and
yeah,
Secret Avengers is, you know, like the supposedly the S.H.I.E.L.D. team. So, you know what I mean?
But it still kind of goes back to the idea, though, that these characters aren't good enough to be in regular Avengers. So now we've got Avengers World where we can spotlight them.
I guess I think it's different, you know, like what the,
well,
the
but it's
for
like,
me the troubling a... premise, right? But the point is, you already touched on it. The troubling premise here is that they're the leftovers, and it's hard to get past.
That's what Avengers World is, though, is they are the leftovers. It's there's something in the world is going to be destroyed, and so we need to have Iron Man, we need to have Thor, we need to have Captain America, we need to have the people that actually matter, and then. Shang-Chi will just throw into this Avengers world, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the only reason why I think, you know, not that I'm trying to defend Avengers world, because it's probably the hardest book for me to read some months. You know, at least they do have, you know, some of the mainstream Avengers in it. You know, like Hawkeye's there, and you know, the Black Widow's there. You know, that's really the only difference. But you know, obviously, you know, we all know that what you're saying is true in that. Yeah, it's the non-essential reading.
But sometimes those non-essentials are people's favorites because you have to know all the backstory and all the different storylines going on in Avengers or Justice League. You can just sort of deal with that book's specificness.
Right.
Specificness?
Specificity, I don't know.
Yeah.
Although I do like Green Arrow in this series. They've done a good job of at least making him interesting, where in his series now, he's kind of been torn apart and ripped up, and they're trying to rebuild him. And so he's in
what
kind of
a $6 million
spot.
Man?
Yeah. But he is in a very different spot in his own book than where he is in this book, and in this book he feels much more like the classic 50s, 60s character of Green Arrow, as opposed to the dark and more, I guess you'd say, mature version of him in his self book right now. Throw out a couple real quick. Infinity Man and the Forever People. The thing that I loved about the first issue was the artwork. So, of course, the first thing they do in the second book is change the artist.
And it's going to be different on the third, too, I hear.
Yeah, so the one thing I was looking forward to in the second issue is gone. So I picked it up, I flipped to the first page, and I said, nah, maybe I'll read it in 6 years, but not this week. So that one is gone off my list already. I was going to give it a chance. The first issue, you know, I tried it, and it was pretty terrible, but I thought I'd give it another shot because I love the artwork, but they got rid of the artist, so I'm done with that. And then one other book real quick I wanted to get to, if I can find it. It's from Oni Press, small publisher book. Here it is. It's called The Life After, and this is from Joshua Hale Fialkov, who writes about 36 books nowadays, it seems like. And in this, you've got a main character who's in some sort of world that he doesn't quite understand. At first, it looks like he's just kind of stuck in one of those dreary existences where the same things happen day after day after day after day. It's just a boring world. Everything kind of sucks. And one day, he just decides to break the routine. He's going to do something different. He's going to, you know, step out of his comfort zone and try to make a change in his life. And as soon as he does, the whole world starts to basically collapse around him. He's in a modern society. He steps off this bus to chase after a girl, and suddenly he's in early 1900s London. It's like suddenly everything's different. He starts touching people, and he can see their history and see what happened to them. And he keeps noticing all these different people had these horrible lives and committed suicide. And he reaches out to one person, and he gives her hope, and the sky opens up, and the roof opens up above her, and she flies off into this bright light, and it sucks the whole building up into the sky. And he's standing there staring at it like, what the heck is going on? And suddenly a brand new building slams down in its place, and the whole world goes back to normal, and he's kind of stuck back in his daily routine trying to figure out what the heck just happened. And you find out, without, you know, giving too much stuff away, you find out that he is in a constructed world. He's in the Matrix, you know, so to speak. He is in some sort of alternate existence. But everyone is there for a specific reason. And without giving it away, because that's kind of the hook of the ending of this particular issue, everyone is there because of a choice that they made in their life. And now that he is awake, so to speak, he can kind of see what this world really is and how all these different people came from all sorts of different countries, they came from different social backgrounds, they came from different time periods. Some people are from the future, some people are from the past, but they're all there because of one specific thing. And the question is, now that he knows this, how do you fix it? How do you escape? How do you change things? You know, so it's really a book about the character discovering his second chance, so to speak. So it was really interesting, and it's one of those books that it's kind of a, you can call it a horror sci-fi, because it definitely has the sci-fi elements of, you know, the Matrix constructed world and the people from different time periods and whatever. But then there also is a horror aspect to it of the way he's being manipulated, and there is a little bit of gore and things within the book that make it uncomfortable. So it's definitely one of those books that, I don't know if this is like a 6-issue thing or if this is supposed to be an ongoing thing. I have absolutely no idea, but I just kind of randomly picked it up for no reason, and it really is setting up an intriguing premise. And it's one of those where, unlike Grayson, that I said I have no idea where this is going, The Life After, I have no idea where this is going, but I'm intrigued by it a lot more. Because it's one of those where he's going to have to make personal decisions about his life and reality and how he treats other people and where he's going to go from here growing as an individual. And so I am really intrigued to see where the story goes.
Cool.
Click of the week, perhaps?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm torn between this and Spread, because I really like Spread as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I like Spread. It's just not my cup of tea, so it's not going to be my click of the week.
Yeah, but it is my cup of tea. So.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into click of the week time. We already said, or we already announced, Roddy Katz was on New Invaders number 7.
That's a good pick. It's a good pick.
I'm going to go with Spread, I believe.
No kidding. I didn't like it that much.
nothing else really like jumped at me this week.
Well, again, you see, that's one of the reasons why I'm sort of contemplating what really struck me this week, because I had a couple of strong feelings about some of these books. Like, I'll give you my my array of books. I'll throw out Captain Marvel number 5. I'll throw out All New Invaders number, what is it, 7?
Yep.
You got to pick one.
I know. You know what? I'll even mention, I'll throw in something that I actually didn't even talk about. Daredevil number 5 I like this week, too. What am I going to pick out of these 3? So I've narrowed it down to the 3. I'm going to go with, surprise, 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 Captain Marvel number 5.
All right.
Just because I enjoy, like I said before, I kind of had some fanboy moments. I really enjoyed the fact that, DeConnick has Captain Marvel basically, announcing to these aliens, like, listen, I'm an Avenger, and I'm doing this, and, you can come and get me if you need to, and I just kind of geeked out at that. I thought that was pretty cool, so.
I think I am going to also go with Spread. I love post-apocalyptic stuff. I just love the art style, the coloring, the storyline, just everything about it, I think clicked for me, so that's going to be my click of the week.
No pun intended. Oh, pun intended. All right.
Good.
Sounds good. We had a lot of stuff to talk about this week.
Yes. So, once again, thanks everyone for watching tonight's episode of Comic Chronicles. I want to thank you for tuning in. Of course, remember, we record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Just make sure to check out theclicknation.com. Follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDOGG98 and at TheClickNation. Dirt is at PCN_Dirt. And also PopCultureNetwork.com. And Agent 70 is at Agent_70. And Roddy Cat, who's not here with us but has been tweeting along live, follow him on Twitter at Roddy Cat and at News Nerd Sneed.
That autofocus is throwing me off, man.
That's the end. Don't worry about it. And with that, we're going to say good night. And I am your host, Tim Dog, and we are the Comic Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Peace!